Do you know what the scariest thing is? To not know your place in this world. To not know why you're here. It's just an awful feeling.
Wonderful day in the neighborhood. Welcome to another edition of Career Callings. I'm your host, Robbie Romeiser, and our purpose at Career Callings is to help people avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision by helping them find, prepare for, and pursue the work God has called them to do. You can join us today by phone, text, or email. Phone or text at 864-381-7649. That's 864-381-7649, or by email at robbie@careercallings.net, R-O-B-B-I-E @careercallings.net. I'm excited about today's guest, and today's guest is none other than Chris Patton. Chris Patton is president and CEO of the Mike Patton Auto Family in LaGrange, Georgia, a three-dealership group with roughly 100 employees representing Honda, Ford, Lincoln, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram franchises. Chris also writes a blog, ChristianFaithAtWork.com, to business owners and leaders who are working to integrate their faith in their businesses. He and his wife Kim live in LaGrange, Georgia, with their three teenage children. Chris Patton, welcome to the Career Callings radio program. Sir, how are you today?
Thanks, Robbie. You're doing great. Having a wonderful day.
Well, having grown up in Georgia, and if I remember correctly, LaGrange is roughly the same latitude of Macon, Georgia, where I grew up. So my guess is, if that's true, by the way, is that true? Does that sound about right?
That is true. That is true. We're due west from Macon.
Due west from Macon. So right now it's probably really, really toasty and probably quite humid. Is that a fair statement?
It's a fair statement. About 360 days a year.
I know. I tell people all the time when I moved to the upstate of South Carolina, I finally figured out what four seasons in the year was like, because in Macon it went from hot to somewhat cold, and that's a stretch, and nothing in between. Well, hey, in that bio I did mention a little bit about your family, but kind of tell us a little bit more about your family and also your career path to where you are now.
Well, Robbie, I have two twin girls that are seniors in high school, and they will be headed off to college in the fall. I have a son who is in college as we speak. He did a gap year through the Chick-fil-A Impact 360 program, and so he is in his second year out of high school, but first year in college, and doing great. My wife is a third grade elementary school teacher and has been for the last 7 or 8 years. And as for my career, I am in the family business. You mentioned the dealership. I'm the oldest of three boys. My brothers are both in the business. My father is, although he's not involved in the business, is still present. So the four of us get to work together, do lunch together every Monday. And it's an awesome position to be in. I started in the business when I was literally 9 or 10 years old. I mean, Dad had a very clear picture that we were going to work as kids and learn the business, or at least work, even if we had chosen to go outside of our business. We weren't going to be staying at home on video games all the time. So 9, 10 years old, I was out here during the summers and on Saturdays washing cars, that kind of thing. And he had us work in every department in the business as we grew up. And so when I got out of college, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to be back in that family business, and have been there since. I love it.
Have you got it figured out yet?
No, not at all. I've learned. I know a lot less today than I knew 20 years ago, because I thought I knew everything 20 years ago.
That is so true. The older we get, the more dumb we realize we are. Isn't that true?
No doubt.
It is. That's great. Well, as you've gone through that career journey and Probably safe to say you're a pretty unique fella, having been able to be in the same business for so long and not have any misdirections or redirections as of yet. So that's pretty cool. So during that time, while you've been on that journey, can you tell us what has been your biggest career challenge throughout that period?
Wow. Well, I will preface it by saying this. About 15 years ago, 17 years ago, came to a spiritual point of renewal, I guess I'll say. I had accepted Christ as a 10-year-old boy and knew what it meant, and it was real to me. But in 2000, I came to realize that God wanted more from me, and went through a process and effectively figured out that I was called to be in business and to do ministry through business. And the first thing I decided to do upon realizing that was to change the model of how we sold cars. And this was in late 2003. And you know, the car business has not got the best reputation for clean transactions, I'll put it that way. And so I wanted to change that. So we did some research, went out and found a consulting firm that would help us make a change in our selling system from the traditional negotiating system to a one price, non-negotiating sales system, similar to a CarMax. And my initial thought literally was, I'll work on this for the next 30 to 60 days. We'll do that transition. And then I'll start doing all these ministry ideas I've got for the business. Well, that 30 to 60 days turned into 18 months, and the transition just literally wrecked the business. We had a pretty strong profitability track record for the 3 or 4 years prior to the transition. And for the next 18 months, we were in red ink, and it was almost overnight. And the challenge, the biggest challenge was I had gone into this transition because I felt God had led me in that direction. And I felt very strongly that this was the first step in what he wanted us to do with this business. But I was the only one after the first 30 days that saw it that way. And everybody else wanted to turn around and go back. And I was committed. You know, I told even my dad was questioning it after the first financial statement came out. And I told him, I said, if you look behind me, the boats are burning. I've burned the ships. We're in this as long as you'll allow me. Because at the time I didn't have any ownership. I was just an employee to him running these dealerships here. And it was a nightmare. And it was day in, day out. Literally, Robbie, I had a small pocket New Testament. I printed out some Psalms, some of the chapters in Psalms, and stuck them inside there. And I would go hide in the bathroom and read these verses in some effort to energize me and keep me from full depression and just being wrecked. I mean, it was just that bad. And my dad's on one side arguing that we need to go back the other way. I've got the employees. We lost 70% of our commissioned sales staff because we stopped paying commission on the profit they made and started paying flats or salary basically for their performance. And so the negotiators left, and we had turned over our entire staff in a period of 18 to 24 months. We're about 95% turnover. And it was just, it was a disaster for me personally and for the business. Now, at the last six of that 18 months, we found someone that had more experience with the system. We hired them. They changed the sales department around in some ways that we did not know how to do. And we started pulling out of it, and it turned out fine. But that 18 months was one of the darkest periods in my life, definitely darkest in my career. And it just, I don't know. I can't even describe the depths. I can tell you this though. At the end of it, I look back, and I had several strong Christian leaders in the business that within the first 60, 90 days stayed with me, committed to it. But after about 3 to 6 months, we're saying, hey, let's think about this again. Should we back up? At no point during the entire 18-month period did my wife back up. She stood beside me the whole way. It cut our income in half overnight, and she didn't flinch. Now, later she says, oh, I had questions. Yeah. I had doubts. But I knew that with everybody else stepping away from you at the time that you couldn't, you had to have somebody standing beside you. So she said, I just stood there and prayed that God would take us through it.
What kept you so tied to your conviction, which is wonderful, and I'm gonna just praise you for that and staying true to what you believe the Lord was having you to do. But what was it that kept you anchored during all that persecution?
So I guess it's one thing that I would call an eternal perspective, and this is probably not new to the listeners, but the idea that I came to realize that the business was God's business. This was the transition from 2003. This is God's business, not mine. I didn't own it. He owns everything. He owns it. He put me as a steward of it for a time. And he led me into that sales process change. And in my mind, when I stepped back and looked at the next 100 years, not the next 30, 60, 90 days, when I looked at the next 100 years, I didn't want to find myself 100 years from then turn around looking back and saying, God, you led me to that, but I got so scared about my personal financial well-being or even the well-being of the business itself that I turned away from you and went my direction. And so I appreciate the praise for staying to my conviction, but in some ways it was just a very simple mindset that this is God's. He's put me in this position, at least for a time. I've got to do it. I guess the conviction came from the absolute certainty that God had put me there. And for me to do anything else would have been literally stepping outside of his will for that time. And I just couldn't imagine doing it. Now, I considered it 100 times. I'd be a liar if I said I never thought about it. But I was just so determined that I would be found faithful later that I did not want to make the change then. And let me clarify, I don't believe the only way to sell cars in the car business is with this system. I don't believe that a negotiating system is sin. It was no different than John the Baptist was called not to drink. And I don't believe that someone that has a glass of wine at dinner, I don't believe that's a sin. But John the Baptist was called not to drink at all, no alcohol. At this time, I believe God had put me on this non-negotiating path. And to a degree, I'm still figuring out why. There's not a very clear answer initially, and there's still some questions around it. But I just knew it. I knew it in my knower, if you've ever heard that. And there was no way that I could do otherwise.
Knew it in my knower. I love that. Yeah, I have heard that, but not in quite a long time. I tell you, that is such a great story and a great lesson to be, to extract from that, because, a lot of times we get into this mindset that if I'm doing the Lord's will, one of the confirming things about whether or not I'm on the right path is that there's immediate blessing and immediate comfort. And that's a very common misconception among us Christians. God never said in the Bible that following his will would bring immediate comfort or immediate success. It might. It certainly did. But there's also a lot of examples in the Bible where it didn't. And, Jesus told us that, and of course I'm paraphrasing, I'm not quoting the exact scripture because I don't remember it off the top of my head, but basically, it costs something to be a disciple.
That's right.
And when the Lord shows you the path he wants you to take, our job is to obey and stick with it regardless of the cost. And that's hard to do. That's hard to do a lot of times. And your story kind of reminded me of the pilgrims that came to this country. I don't have time to relate everything I learned a year or two ago about the sufferings they went through. But so many times they encountered what we today would call closed doors. But they had such a conviction in their minds and hearts that they were doing what they were doing. They were doing what they were doing because the Lord had told them to, that they just kept on plowing through exactly the way you just did there. So it reminds me of also, I think it's 1 Corinthians 14:33, and I'll have to go verify that for our show notes. But basically, if the Lord's shown you his will, you're going to know it. He's going to give you the necessary illumination to know it's his will. So that's good stuff, Chris. That's good stuff. And matter of fact, that's so good. We had such a good time with that one. We're already done with segment number one. So that's a wrap on, segment number one of today's edition of Career Callings. Come back in a few for segment number two. Not long ago, I had a coffee with a young man who I'll call Larry, and Larry was having a tough time in his life because of some financial and emotional woes that had cropped up in his life and was hurting his family. And these financial and emotional woes that had kind of cropped up had cropped up because of a bad career choice. He had chosen a career for the wrong reasons. It was a career mismatch. And as a result of the stress that came from that, his family was suffering emotionally and financially. Hey, don't let that happen to you. Go ahead and do something about it by taking the Career Direct Assessment. The Career Direct Assessment was created by the late Larry Burkett for the very purpose of helping Christians biblically understand and discern how to find a career that matches up with the design God created them with. And just listen for a second, if you will, from a happy, satisfied client of Career Callings named Denise. Denise took Larry Burkett's Career Direct Assessment, and as she says in her testimonial, quote, "Once I completed the assessment, Robbie conducted a video call consultation with me to review my results, and he's easy to talk to, and his passion for helping people find their career direction comes through in his compassionate communication style. After asking several questions, he explained everything well and helped highlight certain insights that were key to my future. More importantly, God and His glory came shining through the session. While Robbie was asking insightful questions during the session, I experienced a significant moment of confirmation and revelation for my life. I could see a glimpse of the bigger picture God had been working in my life over the last few years, and suddenly several events made sense and prayers were answered while inspiring an enthusiasm to move toward my confirmed career calling. Praise God for the work Robbie is doing for and through Christ, and my sincere thanks for helping direct me on to my kingdom work." Thanks, Denise, for your great testimonial. And hey, the Career Direct Assessment has greatly influenced my life, and that's why I want to be able to share it with other people and help people avoid the financial and emotional pain that career mismatches bring. If you'd like to investigate whether or not the Career Direct Assessment is good for you, someone maybe who's already in the workplace looking for an answer to the question, why am I doing what I'm doing? Or maybe you have a loved one, like a child going off to college, that you want to give them some direction on the front end of the career search. Wherever you are in life, at whatever age you're at, the Career Direct Assessment can absolutely help you. I've counseled with teenagers up to 70-year-olds, and the Career Direct Assessment can help them all. If you'd like to learn more about the Career Direct Assessment, go to careercallings.net/discover. That's careercallings.net/discover, and learn more about it and see if it'll benefit you.
But our lives aren't just measured in years. They're measured in the lives of people we touch around us.
This feels like my calling and my purpose in life. There's something different about this journey that's more heart connected.
Purpose is more than just your core of your own self. It's beyond your own identity. Everybody ultimately wants to serve other people.
You can have everything in life you want. You'll just help enough other people get what they want.
And that little bit of sadness in the mornings you spoke of, perhaps you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Looking for a reason to roam through the night, to find my place in this world, my place in this world.
Welcome back from the break to segment number two of today's edition of Career Callings. I'm your host, Robbie Romeiser. And our purpose at Career Callings is to help people avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision by helping them find, prepare for, and pursue the work God has called them to do. You can join us today by phone, text, or email. Phone or text at 864-381-7649. That's 864-381-7649. Or by email at robbie@careercallings.net. That's robbie@careercallings.net. Now back to my interview with Chris Patton. Now, take it to the next level. You did mention earlier on in our conversation in the first segment about how the Lord showed you how you could kind of work ministry and interweave that with your business. So can you tell us a little bit about how you're using your career to impact others for Christ?
I can. So I alluded to it very briefly, describing the transition one price. But prior to that, as soon as I had this spiritual awakening, I'll call it, in 2000, I started trying to figure out, what does God want me to do? I read a couple books, came to realize that I had put God, if you can picture a Dixie plate, the kind of plate with compartments that you get at a picnic. You probably had some of those in Macon.
You're making me hungry.
Exactly. So take one of those plates and imagine that's your life. And I had this big section where the dessert goes, right? That's where I had my work. And the smaller section off to the left is where your entree goes, or your vegetables. That's where I had my family. And the small section where the vegetables you don't like goes, that's where I had God. And I had God as a segment on my plate. I went to church on Sundays. I went Wednesday nights. And he was a real part of my life. And when I came to realize that he was actually, he didn't want more of my time. He wanted my entire life. He wanted the whole plate.
Mm-hmm.
God does not, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength, not just a part of it. And I was giving him a part. So when I realized it was supposed to be the whole, I made a poor assumption. And that assumption was, I'm spending 6 days a week working in the business, and I'm spending one day, actually a half a day a week, giving it to God by going to church, and another half day with my family. And I said, I've got to change that balance. And I thought that I had to leave the business to go do ministry. See, my dad had always brought me up thinking, you've got to separate business from politics, religion, and SEC football. You can't combine those, right?
That's you know exactly right. What I mean. I know exactly what you mean.
So I thought I had to leave the business. In fact, in April of 01, I went to my dad, sat down with him, and said, I'm quitting. I'm resigning. And I'm the oldest of three. He had slated me for his position, taking his job. And to this day, he still remembers the date that we sat down and had that conversation. It was that impactful on him. And I said, I've got to go. And he said, where are you going? I said, I don't have a clue. I don't know. I just know God's leading me to give him everything. I don't feel called, quote unquote, to the ministry to be a paid church staff member, but I've got to do more ministry. And I just don't know what it looks like, but I know it's not worrying 6 days a week about profit. And that really rocked him. But the point was, I started making plans to leave the business. I said, I'll give you a year or two, maybe three, to find my replacement and to make changes in the structure so that you can handle me leaving. But this is where I'm headed. Well, over the next 18 months, I came to realize through a series of events that God had intended me to do ministry right there in the business. He put me in charge of our family business, got about, like I said, about 100, 110 employees, and I could do ministry through the business. And I thought I had to leave. I thought I had to go find a 9-to-5 job that would give me more time to volunteer and do ministry. And then I came to realize I could do all the ministry ideas I had in the business. And the initial confusion there was, okay, if I'm going to run a business, it's God's, but he's put me as a steward, I'm going to run it. How do I measure? Profit used to be my metric. How do I measure ministry? How do I know if I've done what I'm supposed to do? And as I prayed about that, and I'm reading scripture, there was a passage in 1 Corinthians 3, and Paul's talking about, he says, I laid this foundation, the foundation of Christ. And on that foundation, you're going to build with your life, basically. Some of you are going to build with wood, hay, and stubble, and straw. Others with precious stones, jewels, whatever. But whatever you build on the foundation of Christ with your life, at one point on Judgment Day, that's going to be tested by fire, God's fire, which I imagine is pretty hot.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything you've built is going to be tested by that fire. Whatever you've built that survives that fire, it's not physical, it's eternal, you're going to be rewarded for. Whatever you've built that is burned up in that fire, if all you've built burns up, then you'll still escape, but just barely. And so as I tried to figure out how does that passage apply to this dealership group that we've got, I'm picturing at 5,000 feet an aerial view of our business. We've got four buildings, three of them are dealerships, one's a reconditioning center. We've got hundreds of cars, balloons, and people everywhere. You know, balloons sell cars. I don't know if you knew that. But so we had balloons everywhere, this circus atmosphere on a Saturday, right? And all of a sudden, bang, it's tested by fire, God's fire. What's left? Well, it's
not the balloons, that's for sure. Yeah.
Not the balloons. First ones to go. Nothing was left. No cars, no steel racks the cars sit on, no buildings. Intuitively, I knew no bank accounts. Everything's burned that I've built in this business. And then I saw nothing but 19 acres of scorched black earth with hundreds, maybe thousands, dotting the landscape were human silhouettes. And I realized that the silhouettes represented the souls of the people that we impacted for eternity because of the way we would operate the business. And my job description in that moment became two words, add silhouettes. So as the president of our company, my job was to run the business in such a way as to run up the scoreboard, so to speak, with silhouette counts of people that we impacted for eternity somehow through the way we ran the business. And so from then on, I mean, I just had this crystal clear picture. I need to do things in our business that will impact people, employees, customers, people in the community, will impact people, point them to God, possibly tell them directly about Christ at the time, but possibly just plant seeds that they would find later with somebody else watering and harvesting. And when I got that clarity, Robbie, the rest of it became, well, I won't say easy, but it became simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's amazing. That's an amazing picture and a great visual aid to see how the Lord can use our businesses to impact people. Now, how about a productivity tool? Do you have a particular productivity tool that you use to achieve maximum effectiveness in the workplace?
I do. I use NOSBE, N-O-Z-B-E, which is a kind of a project manager for an individual, a to-do list, but to-do list is not really capture what it does, but it's got a ton of features to it. It's got an app on the phone, an app native to the Mac or PC, as well as a web-based. You can access it via the web. And I put everything in it. And it's got scheduling. It's got reminders. It just, if I can get to something electronic, then I am putting a task or an idea or a thought into NOSBE. And it puts it into my to-do list when I need it. So that's a huge one.
Sounds like a great tool. Well, I know I've been blessed by our conversation today, Chris. I know a lot of other people have too. So if someone wants to reach out to you, what would be the best way for them to connect with you?
Sure. The website you mentioned earlier is four words altogether, Christian Faith at Work. And that's at is A-T, not the ampersand. ChristianFaithAtWork.com. On there, there are buttons to find my LinkedIn profile, Twitter, Facebook. Also, an email address would be cpatton, P-A-T-T-O-N, at ChristianFaithAtWork.com. And, you know, I don't always have a ton of time to have lengthy conversations, but if it's an email or message through one of the other social media outlets, then I'm very good about responding. And I will take time to do whatever I can to give someone direction or advice or just hear what they have to say.
Fantastic. Well, Chris Patton, thanks for being a guest on today's edition of Career Calling. Sir, you have a great day.
Thanks. You too, Robbie.
And that's a wrap on today's edition of Career Callings. If you've been blessed by this conversation with Chris Patton, as I have been, and let me just tell you, if you haven't been blessed, your blesser's messed up. It's been a great conversation. So if you'd like to get a copy of this for yourself, go over to careercallings.net/radio, where you can get a copy of today's broadcast, as well as the full length of all the bonus material, all the questions we talked about in our full interview that we could not fit onto our 30-minute on-air program. Remember, seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. God bless. We all have to learn how to pursue God's calling, and that learning requires tons and tons of reading. But if you're like me, life is so busy that it's hard to find time to read. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about Audible. Audible has over 180,000 audiobooks to help you listen and learn on the go. Audible has made me so much more productive, enabling me to learn while I drive, exercise, or work around the house. I know Audible can do the same for you, and that's why I've teamed up with Audible to give my listeners a free audiobook to see if audiobook learning is right for you. Go to audibletrial.com/careercallings and claim your free audiobook today. That's audibletrial.com/careercallings, audibletrial.com/careercallings. Drill down on that a little bit. Can you give me one or two examples of exactly how you're adding silhouettes?
So, for example, we've got, and I can use this individual because she just did a video for us promoting our chaplain's company. We've got a chaplain. One of the first things I did was to bring in a chaplain and works for Corporate Chaplains of America out of Wake Forest, North Carolina. And he comes into our business 2 days a week, touches or speaks to every employee in the business by permission, and does a phenomenal job. So just the fact that we have a chaplain here, he's available 24/7, 365 days a year by pager or cell phone, and provides unbelievable services. But one example, just specifically, we had a young lady about 8 years ago we hired. She had come out of a drug addiction program, had spent 6 months to a year in this women's program, and had a dark past. Young lady, but had made some really bad decisions, spent some time in paying for that, I guess, serving, and had come out of this program with that record and looked for a job. And the lady that runs the program calls me and says, would you be willing to hire her even though she's got this pass? And I said, if you vouch for her, I will. So we hired her as a greeter. So she would just stand in front of the business and greet people as they came in, that kind of thing. And then she showed promise and did a great job. And over time was promoted into the office doing payroll and other things. Well, she had come out of a dark period, met the chaplain, started talking with him. And then within a couple of years got pregnant and had a baby that was premature, weighed 1 pound and 10 or 11 ounces, something like that. I mean, extremely premature. The chaplain is in the hospital with her once or twice a week, working with her, you know, meeting with her after hours, that kind of thing, counseling, that kind of thing, and just supporting this young lady. Today, that young lady is still young in comparison to me, but she is our office manager. She has a strong marriage and a strong relationship with Christ. She gives the chaplain a lot of credit for that, just ministering to her in her time of need and during the challenges, as well as us just giving her a chance to have a job where she could thrive. So that's just one small example. I could literally take the next several hours and just give you story after story after story of people that we have individually impacted just because we have a ministry mindset as a purpose for the business. It's not just something we do. It's the reason the business exists.
Yeah, I tell you, that's such a reaffirmation of a key point we've made time and time again on the show here. You know, I, like so many people, sounded like you to some degree as well, had that mindset that we had to serve the Lord in a specific way. In my world, when I grew up, it was basically, if you want to serve the Lord, you got to be a pastor or a missionary. That's kind of how I was raised. And so often as I interview people like yourself, I realize just how God wants to use business people at all levels of business to reach people for Christ that would never be reached by a pastor or a missionary. And that young lady is a great example of that. So thanks for sharing that and for reminding us, all of us are missionaries where we are today. Chris, in the first segment, we talked about your biggest career challenge, and what a story and what a lesson as well. So thank you for that. Let's kind of flip on the other side of that coin. What's been your biggest career success?
Well, I will say that as I thought about this question, I cannot point to a single moment or a single transaction or a single deal that I've made that I would say is my biggest success. I think for me, the biggest career success has been living out my faith through the business over time. So go back to what we just talked about, the 18 months of torture for me in that transition to one price. That, along with a dozen other smaller, less extreme examples over the last 10 to 15 years, I think points to the fact that my success in this has been to remain consistent, has been one of integrity where, no, I'm not perfect. No, I'm not. I don't know everything, and I don't have this superhuman connection to God. But as a normal guy in a small town family business, trying to live out what God has called me to do on a daily basis without major failures or scandal or huge gaps or inconsistencies in what I do versus what I say, I look at that, I wrap it all up and say, that's probably my biggest career success. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense, man. So much so, because certainly during the time of your biggest career challenge, there could have been so many opportunities to turn your back on the Lord and just forsake what it is you thought he wanted you to do. And so by not doing that, definitely goes in line with what you just said. So that's cool stuff. Now let's get into a little bit of nitty gritty here as far as how you actually live out each day and are successful both business wise and also for the work the Lord wants you to do. What would you say is your number one personal habit that you consistently adhere to that drives your career success?
This may not sound directly connected, but I can guarantee it is. In 2000, when I mentioned that I went through this awakening, so to speak, one component of that, probably the biggest component that drove my change, was I came to realize that I did not have a personal daily quiet time where I was studying the Bible. I owned several Bibles. I took them to church, and when the pastor said, turn to Philippians, then I turned to Philippians. But I was not taking time every day to read, to study, to attempt to just spend time with God and pray about who I'm to be, what I'm to change, all of the above. In October of 2000 is when I started doing that. And since then, I've had a daily quiet time of some sort. In 17 years, it's varied in strength and effectiveness and in somewhat inconsistency. But out of the last 17 years, I may have missed 100 days. I don't know. That may be too many. But I've done something every morning to try to move spiritually closer to him and closer to the person he's created me to be. And because of that anchor, I have seen, I believe, career success, because I continue. Well, I mean, I described it a few minutes ago. The largest success I believe I've had is the consistency over time. And I think that is rooted in that daily quiet time. So if I took that out of my day and some time management coach said, hey, if you could just scratch that 15, 20 minutes or sometimes 45 minutes to an hour from your day, look at how much more you could get done. It would wreck me.
Mm-hmm.
It would absolutely wreck me.
Yeah, that's so true. That'll preach. I don't have to even make any additional comments on that. That's perfect. Just in case it's different, do you have a business habit that contributes to your career success? And what would be that habit?
I would say, and this may not actually fall into the category of a habit, Robbie, but it's, to me, I think it transcends whatever business or industry you're in. And that is only hiring and surrounding yourself with good or great people. Doesn't have to be Christians. We will hire people that are not Christians. We do. There's no part of our hiring process that, I mean, legally can't, but we do not try to discern, is this a believer or not? And we're only going to hire believers. But people that I've heard one individual describe it as, they come with batteries included. They're energized.
I like it.
You get it right instantly. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. So These are people that have a light on when you look at them. They've got a fire in the belly. They've got passion around something. And I've been successful in continuously bringing people into our organization that are like that. Now, I've made mistakes. I've hired people that found a light in the interview, and when they showed up for work the next day, they had lost it somewhere or they had borrowed it from a friend. I don't know what it was, but absolutely, I've made bad hires, or people have lost it over time. But surrounding myself with solid, good, even great people, and not being willing to allow those that don't fit that category to stay around long, I think that's probably the biggest thing. Because alone, I may have that fire, that energy, even skill and competence to high degree. But if I'm the only one, there's only so far I'm going to get. If I've got a team with me of those kind of people, then there's really no limit to how far I can go. And I don't think it matters what business or industry you're in. If you commit to surrounding yourself with the right people, and frankly, I want to make sure I mention this too, Robbie, it's not just employees, but it's people that you hang out with outside of business, because it could also be a personal habit. If you're surrounding yourself with people at work that are fantastic and energized, whatever, and as you leave and you go hang out with people that are downers, then it's going to be a strain on you. It's not going to help you.
Right, right. A lot of our listeners are business owners, or they want to be. So what three things would you tell a new startup business owner to do in order to be successful?
All right. So there are 20 things I would tell them. I'm not sure in what order, but the first three that come to mind are this. Number one is I would determine my purpose, my mission, and make sure that my business is in alignment with that. Too many people do business or do a job that doesn't align with their personal mission or purpose in life. And when that is out of alignment, then the effectiveness, the energy levels, the stamina is diminished considerably. So one would be determine what your purpose, your individual personal purpose, why you think you were created and your mission, and make sure your business or job is in alignment with that. And number two would be determine what your core values are, your personal individual core values. If you have the ability or the authority to convert those into the business's core values, great. But whatever those values are, be rigorous with them. Be almost ruthless in living by those. Those are not suggestions, but those are how you're going to do business no matter what business you're in. And then the third would be take time to sharpen the saw. Everybody's probably heard it, but the idea of whether a saw or an axe, you take two people, line them up, and make them compete in how many trees they can chop down with this axe. The first one is not sharpening that axe, it's wailing away at tree after tree, and the second one, after every 5 to 10 minutes, takes time to file and sharpen that axe. The second one is just going to kill the first one in productivity, even though it appears counterintuitive, taking time out to do that. And as an individual, we've got to do the same thing. We've got to take time to rest. There's a reason there's a Sabbath day. Whether you argue legalistically or not around what work you do or don't do, that's not what I'm referring to. But God set a seventh day out of the week for us to rest, because we cannot go seven straight and expect to be productive and effective. So sharpen the saw, rest, read, learn, recreate, have fun, those things while doing business, taking that time out will make you more effective during the days that you are at work.
Well, piggybacking on the one you just mentioned when you said read, let me ask you this. Other than the Bible, which we establish every week on the program, is the number one book anybody should consume, what would be one book you would recommend to our audience, and why would you recommend that to them?
The first one that comes to mind is not a business book, but is a tremendous book for me as far as my journey. And that was an old book called In His Steps by Charles Sheldon. It's written in originally the series of sermons back in the late 1800s, 1895, 1896, something like that. So you may find an older version where some of the vocabulary is confusing, because it's just older language. But that book is the originating book where what would Jesus do is the question that is asked in that book. And a pastor in that book proposes to his congregation, says, finds a group of people that will live for the next year by asking that question before making the decision and then following whatever they believe Jesus would do in that particular case to the letter and doing it for a year without fail. That book for me was a very clear picture of what I needed to do in the business and was instrumental in kind of guiding me to how I try to run the business.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, speaking of publications, tell us a little bit about your blog real quick. Just do a shameless plug about your blog and any other works, any other works that you've done that are tied to that.
Well, I'll tell you this, it's funny. The blog started out in 2011, Robbie. My wife told me, you need a hobby. You're driving me nuts. And so I didn't know what that hobby would be. Several things popped into my head, but somebody suggested a blog. And even then, I didn't know what I would write about. And I'm not a writer. That's not my identity. But when I finally figured out that I could write about the things that I've struggled with the most, and that is how to do ministry through business, I originally thought it was going to be my mother reading it because I knew she'd read it and tell me how great I am. And I thought that was it. It'd be like an online journal for me to kind of dump my thoughts and struggles. And she'd tell me how great it was after that, and that'd be it. But within 6 months of writing this and just putting it out there, I put the blog together myself with WordPress. It was pretty simple. But within 6 months, I had a pastor that responded via email or actually commented on one of the posts and said, I've never heard of this thing as business as ministry. Would you be willing to teach at our church? And I said, certainly. Where's your church? He said, Chandigarh, India.
Oh, wow.
And I said, wow. First, his name was Rajiv, and that should have tipped me off, but it didn't. And I said, Rajiv, I don't have plans to be in India ever. So how would we do that? And he said, well, you Skype, right? And I said, sure, I Skype. And he said, I've got a bed sheet as a screen. I've got a projector, a laptop, and a generator. And you can teach in your office via Skype. I'll translate, and I'll have some people in my home church, and we'll teach them how to do business as ministry. And so we did five of those over the next 2 years, various congregations or groups, and I'm talking congregation, 15 to 25 people sitting cross-legged on a concrete floor in a small room. We did several groups where just pastors and just teaching 8,000 miles away about business as ministry. So the blog itself, God showed me in that moment that it was bigger than that, than what I thought. It was not just an online journal. At this point, there are probably thousands of blogs that are bigger, Robbie, but this one is basically me saying, I've read a lot of books about people theorizing on how you should do ministry no matter where you are. I've heard sermons about doing ministry everywhere, but I've never read anyone that says, I'm in business, this is what I'm doing, this is how I'm doing it, this is where I've screwed up, or this is where I've done well, and just given the raw truth about where the rubber meets the road. And so that's how I write it. Very transparent. Hey, I've blown this. This is a mistake I made. Or this is something that I blindly stumbled across that worked. And it's been much more than I ever thought. It's an outlet for me, but it's also, I've had people send me emails, send comments with unbelievable ways God has used something he wrote through me to impact them. And it's been fantastic. I cannot imagine not having started that quote-unquote hobby.
Amen to that. If you were sitting in a room of high school seniors, what would be the best piece of career advice you could give them as they prepare to go out into the real world?
it'd be the same advice twice. First thing I'd say is listen, because they're not listening to me initially. High school seniors, I've got
That's
two
so
of
true.
Them, and I
yeah,
love
you know,
them dearly.
Don't you?
And I've got a son that sometimes still acts like a high school senior as much as I love him. But I would say, listen to what I have to say, first of all. But the second piece would also be, listen, you're in high school. You've got 17, 18, 19 years of experience on this planet. And there are people out there, amazingly, that have 20, 30, 40, 50 years more than you do of experience. Go find them Find mentors. If you don't want to listen to your parents, that's fine. Find other mentors, people that are ahead of you on the path. And a mentor doesn't have to be 30 years older. It could be, they could be 5 years older than you. But find people that are godly, that are ahead of you on whatever path you're looking at, and proactively go out and seek their counsel, seek their advice, and then listen to them. Don't let them tell you what they're thinking and you say, yeah, but I know better. So as smart as you are, there are people out there that God has given wisdom to and experience, and you've got to go listen to them. You got to find them and then listen to what they have to say.
Yeah, that's good stuff.